despite the COVID-19 lockdown, Ada Limon has good reason to celebrate National Poetry Month this year. On April 8th, she was awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship in Poetry for 2020, another chance to show gratitude.
I've had remarkable and surprising luck in my life as an artist, but I still think that the only true joy is the making of the thing. And to always return to that will keep you honest with yourself in the creating and in the sort of life you carve out as a writer.
Stay with us to hear a reading from Ada Limon's fifth poetry collection, The Carrying, a book that takes on difficult subject matters from struggles with infertility to devastation from climate change. But she presents it with grace and humor. It's no wonder Limon took home the National Book Critics Circle Award in 2019. Find out more about her poetry today on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam. And I recorded Ada Limon in February 2020, just before the serious outbreak of the coronavirus in the U.S. She was the guest of what turned out to be Rockhurst University's final Midwest Poet Series of the season. Here's professor and director Elizabeth Barnett, a fellow poet and faculty editor of the Rockhurst Review, with the introduction.
It's such a pleasure to welcome Ada Limon to Kansas City. She is the author of five books of poetry, including The Carrying, which won the National Book Critics Circle Award for Poetry and was named one of the top five poetry books of the year by the Washington Post. Her fourth book, Bright Dead Things, was named a finalist for the National Book Award, a finalist for the Kingsley Tufts Poetry Award, and a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award. She serves on the faculty of Queen's University of Charlotte, Low Residency MFA program, and the online and summer programs for the Provincetown Fine Arts Work Center. She also works as a freelance writer in Lexington, Kentucky. I could talk easily about how she writes about love and almost love and what seemed like love, but was really, quote, someone I could hold up to my ear and hear the ocean, something I could say my name into and have it returned in the inky waves. She's equally great on friendship and its small pleasures, like running into each other, walking into the grocery store, and choosing instead to go to the bar next door. But the poems I found myself leaning into most on this reading were what I started to think of as stanza poems. In Italian, stanza means room. So if poems are houses or churches or police stations or malls, they're built of these stanza rooms. And stanzas create space. They're not impermeable, but the shelter they offer helps us make peace with their openness to the world, their partiality. Ada Limon's poems masterfully acknowledge pain and destruction, of the loss of a loved one, of a hoped-for future, of the land and air through environmental threat, which is especially evident in Appalachia. She holds the space of that loss in a way that also enables us to go on, both because we have no choice and because there are other rooms that hold more than loss. In Relentless, the speaker laughs at herself for talking about the weather as a way to, and not to, think about the impending death of a parent whom she is caring for. It ends, quote, and in the morning, despite the oppressive vacancy of her leaving shadow, light comes up over the mountains, and it is, and it is, and it is. I'm so grateful for these poems that give us what is and is and is, the wonderful, the awful, the world. Please join me in welcoming Ada Limon.
Hi, how are you? You doing okay? Lots going on. There's been so much buzz in the news and so much fear, and I'm just happy to be here. And I think it's really good to be reminded to make things and to appreciate art and love and each other and survival. I'm going to read 10 poems. I'm telling you that so that you feel safe in that number and that it gives you a slightly more controllable situation and the otherwise uncontrollable situation that is the poetry reading. If you like what you hear, you can be excited that there is more to come. And if you don't like what you hear, you can sort of slowly count down in your mind. So I'm just going to give you that little safety net.
I'm going to read primarily from my book, The Carrying, which won the National Book Critics Circle Award last March. And I think I will also close with two new poems that I haven't read before. I'm going to begin with the poem that I was tasked to write, a poem that would begin the Academy of American Poetry website the first of the year, and it was 2016. And I was trying to figure out, how do you put together a poem that would start the year without seeming sort of absurdly hopeful and without being rooted in real life? And so I came up with this poem, because I think whenever I need to ground myself, my dog comes into my poems. You'll notice that she's around. I don't know why this is important, but I have a friend who says, you should always tell people it's a pug. She's a little pug. The leash. After the birthing of bombs, of forks and fear, the frantic automatic weapons unleashed, the spray of bullets into a crowd holding hands, the brute sky opening in a slate metal maw that swallows only the unsayable in each of us. What's left? Even the hidden nowhere river is poisoned, orange and acidic by a coal mine. How can you not fear humanity? Want to lick the creek bottom dry, to suck the deadly water up into your own lungs like venom. Reader, I want to say, don't die. Even when silvery fish after fish comes back belly up and the country plummets into a crepitating crater of hatred, isn't there still something singing? The truth is, I don't know. But sometimes I swear I hear it, the wound closing like a rusted over garage door, and I can still move my living limbs in the world without too much pain, can still marvel at how the dog runs straight towards the pickup trucks, breaknecking down the road because she thinks she loves them, because she's sure without a doubt that the loud roaring things will love her back. Her soft, small self alive with desire to share her goddamn enthusiasm. Until I yank the leash back to save her, because I want her to survive forever. Don't die, I say. And we decide to walk for a bit longer, starlings high and fevered above us, winter coming to lay her cold corpse down upon this little plot of earth. Perhaps we're always hurtling our bodies toward the thing that will obliterate us, begging for love from the speeding passage of time. And so maybe, like the dog obedient at my heels, we can walk together, peacefully, at least until the next truck comes. I've been sort of lately thinking a lot about praise and gratitude and how to survive in a world that feels more brutal every minute. And I think often it is looking and praising those that we love, those that have loved us, as well as the earth. And this is a praise poem for my mother. I was born with scoliosis. A lot of people have scoliosis. It's a curvature in the spine. Mine is somewhat severe. And so I've had to go through a lot of back work in my life to get myself straight and walking and not in too much pain. I think about that and I was realizing I didn't do that. My mom did that. So this is a poem called The Raincoat. When the doctor suggested surgery and a brace for all my youngest years, my parents scrambled to take me to massage therapy, deep tissue work, osteopathy, and soon my crooked spine unspooled a bit. I could breathe again and move more in a body unclouded by pain. My mom would tell me to sing songs to her the whole 45-minute drive to Middle Two Rock Road and 45 minutes back from physical therapy. She'd say that even my voice sounded unfettered by my spine afterwards, so I sang and sang because I thought she liked it. I never asked her what she gave up to drive me or how her day was before this chore. Today, at her age, I was driving myself home from yet another spine appointment, singing along to some maudlin but solid song on the radio, and I saw Mom take her raincoat off and give it to her young daughter when a storm took over the afternoon. My God, I thought, my whole life I've been under her raincoat. thinking it was somehow a marvel that I never got wet. This is another poem that begins with some of my own pain that I deal with and some physical issues. It takes place in New Orleans. Wonder Woman. Standing at the swell of the muddy Mississippi after the urgent care doctor had just said, well, sometimes shit happens. I fell fast and hard for New Orleans all over again. Pain pills swirled in the purse along with a spell for later. It's taken a while for me to admit. I am in a raging battle with my body. A spinal column 35 degrees bent, vertigo that comes and goes like a DC Comics villain nobody can kill. Invisible pain is both a blessing and a curse. You always look so happy, said a stranger once as I shifted to my good side, grinning. But that day, alone on the riverbank, brass blaring from the steamboat Natchez, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a girl, maybe half my age, dressed for no apparent reason as Wonder Woman. She strutted by in all her strength and glory, invincible, eternal, and when I stood to clap, because who wouldn't have? She bowed and posed like she knew I needed a myth, a woman by a river, indestructible.
Thank you. Ada Limón, reading from her 2018 book, The Carrying, which besides Wonder Woman, celebrates another wondrous woman, her mother, the visual artist Stacia Brady, whose work graces the covers of all five of her daughter's poetry books. You're listening to New Letters on the Air. Now back to Ada Limón.
It's good to write praise poems, I think. Not just for the other person, but also for yourself. It's good to be reminded. This is another praise poem about a weed, not that weed. But who gets to decide what is a weed and what is a flower, I think, is a question I often consider. So this is a poem for a dandelion. Dandelion insomnia. The big-ass bees are back, tipsy, sun-drunk, and heavy with thick-knitted leg warmers of pollen. I was up all night again, so today's yellow hours seem strange and hallucinogenic. The neighborhood is lousy with mowers, crazy dogs, and people mending what winter ruined. What I can't get over is something easy, simple. How could a dandelion seed head seemingly grow overnight? A neighbor mows the lawn and bam, the next morning there's 100 dandelion seed heads, straight as arrows and proud as cats, high above any green blade of manicured grass. It must bug some folks, a flower so tricky it can reproduce asexually, making perfect identical selves, bam, another me, bam, another me. I can't help it. I root for that persecuted rosette, so hyper in its own making it seems to devour the land. Even its name, translated from the French, Dent de Lion, means lion's tooth. It's vicious, made for a time that requires tenacity, a way of remaking the toughest self while everyone else is asleep. You know, there are times you're brought to places because people admire your work, and then there are also times you're brought to places and you realize very quickly that you're meant to sort of fill a slot on someone's calendar, and that's when you realize you're maybe there to be a token. And so this is a poem I've written that's the difference between representation and tokenism and how that feels. It also includes a true story about my father, which I'll explain after. The contract says we'd like the conversation to be bilingual. When you come, bring your brownness so we can be sure to please the funders. Will you check this box? We're applying for a grant. Do you have any poems that speak to troubled teens? Bilingual is best. Would you like to come to dinner with the patrons and sip Patron? Will you tell us the stories that make us uncomfortable but not complicit? Don't read us the one where you were just like us. Born to a greenhouse, a garden, don't tell us how you picked tomatoes and ate them in the dirt, watching vultures pick apart another bird's bones in the road. Tell us the one about your father, stealing hubcaps, after a colleague said that's what his kind did. Tell us how he came to the meeting, wearing a poncho, and tried to sell the man his hubcaps back. Don't mention your father was a teacher, spoke English, loved making beer, loved baseball. Tell us again about the poncho, the hubcaps, how he stole them, how he did the thing he was trying to prove he didn't do. You have made it halfway through. That poem is a true story about my father. It's also a true story about a contract. You know, my father was a school administrator, and he was at a faculty meeting, and one of his colleagues said that he wouldn't park his car by a certain school because the Mexicans there would just steal his hubcaps. And my father, being Mexican, went out and stole the man's hubcaps. And then the next faculty meeting, my father dressed in a sombrero and poncho and came in and tried to sell the man his hubcaps back. And so when he retired from that specific school district, they gave him an engraved hubcap. And his point was made. One of the things that I love the most about poetry is its ability to contain something terrible and some idea of survival all at once. Like, that to me is like, how do you do that, right? And so that lean towards survival, that sort of recognizing that the poem itself is an act of rebellion, that is always, I think, sort of intrigues me. This is a poem that I can sort of make excuses for, but I'm just going to say it's how I personally feel about this song. A new national anthem. The truth is, I've never cared for the national anthem. If you think about it, it's not a good song. It's too high for most of us, with the rocket's red glare. And then there are the bombs. Always, always, there is war and bombs. Once I sang it at homecoming and threw even the tenacious high school band off key. But the song didn't mean anything, just a call to the field, something to get through before the pummeling of youth. And what of the stanzas we never sing, the third that mentions no refuge could save the hireling and the slave? Perhaps the truth is every song of this country has an unsung third stanza, something brutal snaking underneath us as we absent-mindedly sing the high notes with a beer sloshing in the stands, hoping our team wins. Don't get me wrong, I do like the flag. How it undulates in the wind like water, elemental and best when it's humbled, brought to its knees, clung to by someone who has lost everything, when it's not a weapon, when it flickers, when it folds up so perfectly you can keep it until it's needed, until you can love it again, until the song in your mouth feels like sustenance, a song where the notes are sung by even the ageless woods, the short grass plains, the Red River Gorge, the fistful of land left unpoisoned, the song that's our birthright, that's sung in silence when it's too hard to go on, that sounds like someone's rough fingers weaving into another's, that sounds like a match being lit into an endless cave, the song that says, my bones are your bones, and your bones are my bones, and isn't that enough?
You're listening to Rockhurst University's 2020 Midwest Poets Series reading by Ada Limon from her National Book Critics Circle Award-winning book, The Carrying. This is New Letters on the Air.
I'm going to read a love poem for my husband. Has anyone here seen a horse being born? It's a very strange experience. And I was always trying to figure out what to do with that image. And somehow I turned it into a love poem. It's just a horse comes out of another horse. That's for those of you who haven't seen it. What I didn't know before was how horses simply give birth to other horses. Not a baby by any means, not a creature of liminal spaces, but already a four-legged beast hell-bent on walking, scrambling after the mother. A horse gives way to another horse, and then suddenly there are two horses, just like that. That's how I loved you. You, off the long train from Red Bank, carrying a coffee as big as your arm, with two computers swinging in it unwieldy at your side and your bag. I remember we broke into laughter when we saw each other. What was between us wasn't a fragile thing to be coddled, cooed over. It came out fully formed, ready to run. There's two real authentic factors as to why horses are in my poems. One of them is that when I was 17, my mom was a caretaker on a horse ranch, retired police horses from San Francisco. So they were all quarter horses, and she was the caretaker on this ranch so that I was living with these horses, right? So that's one. And then the second one is that I live in Lexington, Kentucky, which is the thoroughbred capital of the world. So I am around horses all the time in that way. I also think that my connection with horses is a little different in the sense that I really am fascinated by them. I am fascinated by their separateness. And I think that that is what intrigues me. There's people who are like, no, they're just like big dogs. I'm like, no. You know, there's just this power to them that is extraordinary, and this quietude and grace, but really, you know, extreme mercurial power and speed that these animals have. And so I think I'm always fascinated by that, that sort of almost this like unattainable connection you can have between human animal and horse animal. So I'll read another love poem. I laugh that my husband gets notifications online like where I am. I mean, he knows where I am. That sounded really weird. But he'll say, oh, I saw, you know, someone took a picture, you looked great out there, you know. And I laugh because when I'm with him and when I'm home, I am not the person that is reading the poems, because the person that reads the poems is very different than the person that writes the poems. And those of you who are artists know that this is true, that there is the person that can present and read and have a conversation and be in a public space, and the writer self doesn't want to have anything to do with that. And that also pertains to how I dress and look and move in my house. And so I looked at him one time and said this first line of the poem, which I'll read to you now. The poem is called Love Poem with Apologies for My Appearance. Sometimes I think you get the worst of me. The much-loved loose forest green sweatpants, the long braless days, hair knotted and uncivilized, a shadowed brow where the devilish thoughts do their hoofed dance on the brain. I'd like to say this means I love you. The stained white cotton t-shirt, the tears, the pistachio shells, the mess of orange peels on my desk. But it's different than that. I move in this house with you the way I move in my mind, unencumbered by beauty's cage. I do like I do in the tall grass, more animal me than much else. I'm wrong. It is that I love you, but it's more that when you say it back, lights out, a cold wind through curtains, for maybe the first time in my life, I believe it. Thank you. I'll close with two new poems. This is a Abecedarian, which is every line begins with another letter of the alphabet. So when you hear the X, Y, and Z, you'll know we're getting to the end. Abecedarian for the future. All the old gray gods have fallen back to their static realms of myth. Cleared from the benches, thrones, dragged, kicked to their stone tombs, each one grizzled by their swift exile, frayed, bedraggled, forced to kneel, give up their guns, armor, swords, hand over their passports, global security identification, and be stripped bare. Justice has relegated them to history, kept nothing but the long, rancorous list of crimes, slaughterers all, molded them into dull cement statues, not to worship, but as a warning most ominous. Here stood greed and his brother pride. Note their glazed, inhuman eyes. Question their puny stature now, how rodent-like, how utterly overthrowable. Still, remember how long they ruled? Tyrannical and blustering, claiming universal power, until the kinder masses voted the callous, thin-lipped lizards out. What a day that was. The end of hatred, xenophobia, patriarchal authority. But yes, we waited too long. First, we had to zero out, give up on becoming gods at all. This poem is a poem I wrote for Greenpeace, and they asked me to write something about global warming and how it had personally affected me. And I'm from Sonoma, California, originally, and I spend a lot of time there still. And we are highly affected by the fires, the wildfires. And so this is a poem about that. Salvage. On the top of Mount Pisgah, on the western slope of the Mayacamas, there's a madrone tree that's half burned from the fires, half alive from nature's need to propagate. One side of her is black ash, and at her root is what looks like a cavity that was hollowed out by flame. On the other side, silvery green broadleaf shoots ascend toward the winter light, and her bark is a cross between a bay horse and a chestnut horse, red and velvety like the animal's neck she resembles. I have been staring at that tree for a long time now. I am reminded of the righteousness I had before the scorch of time. I miss who I was. I miss who we all were before we were this, half alive to the brightening sky, half dead already. I place my hand on the unscarred bark that is cool and unsullied, and because I cannot apologize to the tree, to my own self I say, I am sorry. I am sorry I have been so reckless with your life. Thank you.
Ada Limone, reading two new poems at Rockhurst University's February 2020 Midwest Poets Series. The rest of the poems came from her fifth poetry book, The Carrying, her third collection published by Milkweed Editions and winner of the 2018 National Book Critics Circle Award. You can hear poetry from Ada Limone's first three books in a 2011 interview for New Letters on the Air when she talks about one of her poetry teachers, the late Philip Levine, and more. Just visit our website, newletters.org, and click On the Air to find our audio archives. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcast of the show under Ways to Listen or wherever you find your podcast. Keep up with us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. And if you write poetry, fiction, or essays, consider entering your work in our New Letters writing contest for publication in our magazine. The deadline is May 18th. For more details, go to newletters.org and click on Writers Wanted. Or if you just want to donate to our literary efforts, there's a Support New Letters tab in the top right corner. Before we go, we'll leave you with one last thought from 2020 Guggenheim Poetry Fellow Ada Limone, borrowed from the poet you'll hear next week.
Nikki Finney once told me that when you're in a sort of ungrounded place or feeling that anxiety, to remember the roots of the trees and the ground that is underneath you and let them give you permission to bear witness to what it is to create and to share work and the power of that. And that is an important and beautiful thing.
Tune in for poet Nikki Finney next time. From UMKC, today's show has music by Kevin McLeod from Incompetech.com and was produced with Amina Dalton and Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam. Thanks for listening to New Letters on the Air.